Algorithm of Grief. Kima awoke from the warm light slipping through her eyelids. Her sleeping pot shook softly, unfolding its breathing arms. She stirred to her side and read off the pot's rest tracker, which showed that night's reading. Respiration, 9.2. Environment, 8.3. Sleep quality, 9.7. Time, 7.8 hours. A sigh escaped her lips and she stretched happily. Judging from the lightness of her body and clarity of mind, it felt like it had been her best sleep since the last new moon. The monitor flickers, and she sees a graph of her rest summarizing the previous 3 weeks. It looked like a reading of the heartbeat from someone once dead. Surging skywards from a crawl, last night had been her best sleep. It didn't make sense. Thinking it was a temporary error to the pot system or a statistical issue, she let it slide and went on to start her day. It wasn't noticeable at first, but as time passed, something started to feel off about her Espacio. There was something so obviously different, but not enough to make her pinpoint what it was exactly. She looked around, wandering from room to room like a detective on a quest to find anything out of sorts. Looking at her lifelines, her digital social web, nothing seemed unusual. She had been receiving messages up until last night, the usual conversations. A grandchild asking for help with a loan, her children sending photos of stuff to fix or a new place they went to, a friend from the Senior Citizens Guild inviting her to play a hip and knee friendly version of Sepak Takraw. Nothing was new or surprising. The world as it was, the entirety of it, was as usual. Maybe it was the ordinariness that she could just not shake away. Or perhaps she had forgotten something important. Kima noticed that her memory had started to lose its edge. She once had everyone's lifeline numbers memorized. Now, it took her some time to recall a password, often memorable lyrics mixed with numbers and symbols. There were increasing occasions of misplaced keys or hissing plants that she'd forgotten to water. The latest sign of her ailing memory was forgetting the birthday of one of her grandchildren, who ended up throwing such a tantrum he even blocked her on Age Gap, a lifeline dedicated to support conversations between generations. After scoring through her files, documents, and photo albums, seeing nothing missing or out of place, she looks even more closely at her digital devices. It was with some disappointment that she finds her histories all intact. The caches were uncleared. She could see the places and websites she had been on weeks before. No suspicious activity. Maybe it would have been anticlimactic if the mystery had ended there. Instead of feeling let down by the absence of clues, her excitement grows. She kept following her gut instinct to dig deeper, bite into the urge and chase this all the way to the end. It reminded her of her youth when she worked as a story weaver for an alternative media station, where she gathered community stories about people's lifelines and wrote about their patterns. Stubbornly persistent, her stories had been a driving force for uncovering those odd goings-on that often went unnoticed. Many of them had made the village elders take notice and ultimately discussed during assemblies. Kima would proudly declare in family reunions that her stories were the catalyst behind some of the most progressive laws in the community, stories which roused mother spirit in every member of the commune. Hearing her regale them with tales of her glory for the umpteenth time, her children and their children would roll their eyes. Can we please talk about anything else? There was a trail here. Kima's long unused yet nevertheless accurate nose could sense it. With newfound energy, one she had not felt for many years now, she started to scroll through her different lifelines. When she was a story weaver, many revolutions ago, her protocol would always be to start by browsing and mapping through lifelines. People shared their lives there, and she most especially. At first, society was apprehensive of the strange new technology, but through the rise and fall of tides, they had come around to find and co-create online spaces where people could share openly and safely about their private experiences and innermost thoughts. Things they were often too shy to share, even with a shaman. She scrolled through her many lines, her many lives. It was like history was playing out backwards. Before her eyes, her present evolves into past. She watches an old woman awkwardly dancing a folk song, her gestures revealing a flower unblooming into a bud, retracing, then erasing footprints she'd left on paths around the world, into the arms of one person after another, her back slowly becoming straighter, eyes less milky, laugh lines fading into shadows. She replaced the most significant struggles, greatest successes, and the most ordinary days. Though she tried to maintain a professional distance, seeing herself as the subject of investigation, she could not help but feel like she was at a beach, stretching out towards the horizon where waves blur the lines between land and bodies of water. And there, reflected in the water, was herself. In her palms, she would try to fit as much of the ocean's volume of data, yet they would simply slip through her fingers. For the following weeks, Kima focused on mapping her timelines, the dates where she was, the people she was with, what she was doing, what she was feeling, video clips, words, audio recordings. Much like time traveling, her mind drifted to occupy the moments she captured. So many rants about the most mundane things, taxes, knees, lineaments, the neighbor's new pets. There was so much life to trudge through. What she was looking for was not just a needle in the haystack, but making sense of the haystack. Even after poring through those different lifelines of hers, from lines where her children would upload dance videos to those meant to connect citizens with elders or councils, nothing seemed particularly amiss. Her life seemed to brim and overflow with events, people, and color. Ticking her first checkbox, she moved on to the next, which was to investigate and look at the advertisements found across her lifelines. When she was a full-time story weaver, she wrote a popular piece about why women refugees from nearby exploded stars all ended up doing the same kind of work. Even after revolutions, women from the recently extinct star Centauri A were all doing some form of work related to fabrics and clothing. In contrast, women from Centauri B, all 100%, ended up in kitchens across the archipelago. Interstellar laws weren't as inclusive as they are now, and Centaurians were classified as type A or B back then. She remembered interviewing Axie, now a member of the Inner Council, about why she had ended up starting a career as a seamstress despite being a well-regarded scholar on her star. While Z finished up sewing the buttons of a uniform, Axie said that Z lifelines just kept on showing this job, all of them, if not to sew, to laundry. Can't afford to be picky now, yeah? It was downplayed by the founding lifelines, who, though few, controlled ads that wouldn't and wouldn't show up, who then defended that they only wanted to help Centaurians find work quicker. It didn't take long for Kima to uncover that the consoles guiding the first lifelines did not have any Centaurians on them, nor did the heavily advertised jobs in very limited sectors pay a fair wage. At first, even Kima couldn't quite believe how something as seemingly inconsequential as an ad you scroll past could possibly alter your world. But it does. Many Centaurians would live until their twilight years doing the same kind of work, feeling stuck and voiceless. It was the story Kima was most proud of. Years later, after the 400-day revolution, Axie, along with many of the Centaurians Kima had woven with, were asked to partner with and counsel lifelines for the wider world web. Advertisements. Kima knew it was a long shot given the many changes to lifelines that she hadn't kept up with, but she was convinced that they must have left some form of crumbs that she could trace. Going through her lifelines one at a time, she started to map out the different advertisements that had shown up in the last couple of weeks. She had expected it to be a lot more difficult, but since lifelines had been required to commit to full ad transparency, it had become pretty easy. She had expected to have thousands of them relishing the idea of spending the next months poring through each one, but was disappointed to note that there were only a few hundred, many of which were dated revolutions ago, back when lifelines and Kima herself were still in their beginnings. There was an ad about the latest air rider, named after the ancient typhoon Yolanda, which had the highest carbon negative output of all the other models on the market. Kima wondered if she had had a sudden urge of leaving and going off somewhere. In the bucket list that she had found, written by her then teenage self, she had written that she wanted to one day airsurf through the Westerlies. She'd been having impulsive desires the last couple of months, which had grown more frequent. She'd suddenly be completely swept up about something new. Just a few weeks ago, she had set up an aquaponic garden for some extraterrestrial plants she had specially requested to be imported, and even bought a new ice cream maker that freezes using an unstable element that added a unique flavor. Could she have spontaneously decided to airsurf? Another ad was for an upcoming film by an independent director, a historical romance set during the Age of Migration and played by a famous young actress. Maybe, even though she hated romance, she had wanted to watch this? Yes, the plot sounded absolutely cliché and boring to her. And yes, none of the cast were familiar or exciting, but maybe she had wanted to go nevertheless? Had someone invited her and she had failed to mark it in her calendar? Or maybe the actual clue was the Age of Migration, that during this epoch in humanity a secret was being kept, raging from the depths of her subconscious? Well, it didn't feel like rage, but whatever she was looking for did make her feel uneasy. There were a few political ads meant to boost the images of those running for inner and outer consuls, which Kima had long chosen to block off from her lifelines. Other ads were about the most random things, a bioluminescent bouldering center, a Tibetan musical instrument, an anti-gravity slipper, a karaoke machine that claimed to read minds, and even ergonomic socks whose thread count can boost your walking pace by up to 0.5 miles per hour. She noted them all down, categorizing them, noting their distinct features and her own impressions of them. None called out to her, as much as they sounded interesting in their own way, with her imagination making her think of ways she could try them out. Whatever she had forgotten couldn't possibly be about any of those products or services. As a story weaver, it's important to be detailed. One can't ever be too sure. Everything requires evidence. And so she unpacked each ad, trying to understand what they meant, where they came from, how they were selected to show up in her lines, information all easily requested from the lines. Yet, even with the information that they gave her, she remained unsatisfied. It was not enough. It comes to a point where she starts reaching out to businesses and companies that push the ads, something that would have been a wild goose chase during Kima's career. She even visited their stores to look at their wares and products. She spent hours just staring at and then trying on a pair of Levitate shoes that her grandchildren had been raving about, trying to spark something in her memory. The store clerks were fascinated with her tale and said they knew their company had advertised through three lines for a few months to jibe with the holidays. Had she, coming across an ad, wanted to give someone a present? Continuing with mapping her past, she came upon a decades-old ad shared by a friend. Long ago, back when viral was a living word in the many languages. It was titled in a clickbait fashion, "Want to delete your history?" And the ad talked about an advanced state-of-the-art technology that can help people forget certain memories. It was initially meant to help those with lived experiences of trauma, promising them the therapeutic benefits of forgetting. Kima tried to make sense of all of this. Had she perhaps deleted a part of her memory? A fear came over her in waves, along with a thrill that rose from her aching feet. Could she have deleted a part of her? She tried calling the lifeline of the contact person on the poster. Yet no one answered. There was also no available information on the web about it, with few articles written about history deletions. Could this be a high security secret? It was absurd. Yet, it was like an itch. Could she have done it, actually deleted something herself and then left such a thrilling mystery for her future self to find? Like a treasure hunt masterminded by her. Oh, Ima, still looking for trouble, you old girl. She said to herself every time, "You smart girl, I'll show you." On the other hand, it could have been something else. Was she forced to be deleted? Was this even possible? Regardless of which, what was it that was missing, that had been taken away? Hitting a stumbling block, Kima decided to ask Kyle for help. He was her youngest and the only one in the clan who had decided to pursue the same career as her. Kyle was a known and beloved story weaver, writing about newly discovered plants and animals across star system. Fortunately, he was on an extended work break and was resting a few islands away. By Kima's request, he came early the next day, too tired to even do the proper greetings. Instead, he made his way inside with just a few quick whispers on Kima's open palms. Kima excitedly led him to the dining area, showing off her paperwork and other documentation, stacks of them. Proudly hung on the walls were her story maps, highlighting her observations and findings on the ads. "It feels like I'm getting close to whatever it was I had forgotten." Gael sighed deeply. this was the last thing he wanted to do while on his leave. As much as he wanted to be honest and tell her to move on to other things, he also knew how stubborn his mom could be. She was a story weaver who dug her heels 6 feet into the ground, never letting go. Thinking this would be resolved more quickly by giving in to her curiosity, hoping her ignited passion would fizzle out sooner, he let her speak. It was obvious to her that Kael didn't share her level of excitement, but she rattled on and on nonetheless. "Those are my guesses. I think I came upon this ad, then did something to have myself deleted. Either way, it was me or someone else. Ima, I don't know what to make of them." Kael looked like he was more interested in the stew boiling on the stove that gave mouth-watering whiffs of herbs and chili. "This is not my field of expertise." "I've sorted them out for you. Here." Kima shows him what looked like a complex analysis of the contents of the deleted history ad, along with the outcomes of her research so far. "I'm noticing a few probable patterns. I'll refresh my memory. Did I ever mention a story I was chasing, or something I wanted to forget? Have I been behaving strangely the last week?" Kael sounded irritated. "I just got back, so I haven't seen you that much, Ma. The last time we spoke through lines, you were just talking about visiting Kaya. But I'm sure you've never been interested in any of these, much less talked about any story with me." Not liking his tone, Kima mimicked it. "And what do you know of my interests?" It was her usual way of starting an endless debate, and Kael was not in the mood for it. "Ima, looks like all this, with the lifelines and the ads and the deleted, they are getting to you. I can't answer your questions. Maybe you will have more luck with the Digea?" Kima felt frustrated at being told such an obvious answer. She knew she could have gone to the Digital Health Center, or Digea, directly. But for some reason, she had wanted to ask Kael first. There was something that she couldn't voice, in the same way that there was something she wanted to tell Kael before he had left, but it was left stuck like a fishbone in her throat. Whatever it was, she set it aside, vowing to come back to it. Right now, there were more important things. Afterwards, Kima immediately got ready, wearing her favorite story weaver outfit that had been skulking in the backmost corner of her drawer, beside beads of leftover mothballs. She made her way to the Digea. She felt like she was young again, wearing her silk head wrap, which despite its age still shone beautifully in its loud turquoise color that made her long silver white hair look like Talon, the majestic waterfall. The nearest Digea was only 100 wingspans from her espacio. Every commune was required to have one. It was usually located in the fourth Patelf, a flower-shaped hanging structure that held other health centers such as the Menea for mental health, Physea for physical health, or Metea for maternal health. Larger communes had more centers, and recently a competitive spirit had been sparked with communes trying to outdo each other with the number of Patelfs they could offer. So far, Parjab, which holds the renowned Lotus Patelf afloat between two cliffs, was the envy of all, and whose Lotus Health model might soon be replicated in other communes. Kima queued for her turn in the triage of their humble Ixora of four Patelf Digea. From the giant wooden desk, she saw a familiar face and started to wave her shawl to one of them. It was Nej, her fifth-degree cousin, just a few revolutions younger, but with whom she had spent most of her childhood making up stories with, sparing no one. "Nej, why, how many orbits has it been?" Kima greeted loudly, holding their face close and kissing over their dark eyelids lined like three rings. Their skin showed the marks of age. Sunspots covered them from head to toe like a galaxy painted with stars. "Ima, how strange, how far has our time been?" Nej was starry-eyed, and Kima felt infected. It dawned on her that it had been so long since she had visited Nej, so long in fact that she couldn't tell how much time it had been. Nej led Kima into a separate espacio, where they sat on the soft flooring woven from Alpha Centaurian leaves, ochre-dyed pillows with a center table that held various devices. A calming incense burned from a clay pot nearby that relaxed Kima. It smelled like the Belletti tree she had once whispered the names of her secret crushes to while she was studying. "I know we have much to sing about," Nej joked, "but the Digea's quite busy. So let me assist you first, and after my duty, I'll visit your espacio." Kima happily told Nej about her investigation with much flair and drama. Nej looked hooked and captivated, and it felt like they were children again, crafting myths about their aunts and uncles or inventing conspiracies about the communes. I've only heard about deleting histories from Earthians. Have they actually imported that tech here? Nej said, wait, let me check the ad first. Let's go over the consent agreement. After the ceremony of consent, Nej expanded their screen so that Kima could see better without using their lens. Here is the ad you were talking about. From our examinations, they've appeared across your lifelines only once. See this attention dimension here? Your first visual contact with them is only in the past week, when you started your investigation. All of our tests also show that they have no data on you, and that, as far as your lifelines are concerned, you haven't engaged with them in any way, including for any trade or business. Kima could not help but peel the dry skin from her fingers. A nervous habit. Could I have been deleted without me knowing? Maybe by someone else? Illegally? Nej searched through the web. See here, Ima. This is the record of all activities on deleted history compiled by our Digea activists, business and government sectors combined. As far as we can see, delete history has never been practiced here, in any commune. In the Earthian web, same thing. It never went beyond the non-human experimentation. The ad is classified as fake news and false advertising, and the technology never really became more than a rumor. Kima deflated at that. Yet even with the rock-solid information Nej had given her, she couldn't let go of the thought. This information, could it have been tampered with? Remember in our Ashen days, lifelines were all just free to do whatever they wanted? Sure, long ago, before Petra lost its rings, Ima. Nej patiently explained, showing Kima the timeline of the Silver Revolutions. Lifelines who were secretly partnering with traders or merchants would harvest all they could from us. Always, everything was about what could be sold, and they would incite even our mother's spirit just to make a sale. They would even show you ads of whatever they felt would make you react. Remember Tiu Kamal? Kima remembers Tiu Kamal, her mother's eldest brother who had sworn off lifelines completely. It was soon after losing Kiltu. Each day would find his lifelines full of advertisements about funeral parlors, memory vials, or new models of urns. Even during Tia Kiltu's 50 Songs of Sorrow, he was bombarded by ads about mate finders and pheromone perfumes. Back then, Kima had just thought Kamal could not handle the loss and decided to stay away from any form of lifelines, that it was his form of mourning. She recalled him burning all the lines he had in the backyard, looking proud at the massive crackling bonfire. For her, it was horrible and sounded like bones breaking. And now? Kima tried to steer Nej back before moving farther from the answer she sought. Nej flashes a different picture on the screen, showing Kima's digital health assessment report. I'm afraid there's no trail here for your story. No crumbs. An ant wouldn't even bother. Beyond the Digea Pact, where all lifelines are blood compact partners, there are layers of regulatory systems which make sure that no one is harmed by any tech or any lifeline. We'll draft a report on this too. But for now, this is all I can give you, Ima. As though a valuable lead was taken away, Kima wanted to berate herself for wasting so much time. To end up with nothing. It's just that there's something there, Nej, something I am missing, and I cannot say precisely what it is. There's no technology capable of deleting histories or memories. I can assure you of that. Even if there were, you've never been the kind of person to do that, Ima. Remember the name of your column when you were a story weaver? Never forget? Before they parted, Nej had whispered a tender poem over the character sewn in Kima's shawl. One passed down orally in rituals between soulmates and sisters. My eye, my other, my ink, my paper. What are we if not the full and empty? Don't we find ourselves only when we are missing? After her appointment and the fun get-together she and Nej had after duty, Kima was tiredly fixing the mess that was Respasio. An ache of acceptance had settled in the pit of her stomach. It was like a rock thrown into a dead river, and after the flurry of disturbed sediments had finally sunk to the bottom. Now even the sediments were quiet. It was in this solitude that the clear, laughably simple answer emerged. She had missed this. She had missed being like this, consumed by mother's spirit and passionately searching for questions, for things unknown, for stories. She had so desperately longed for a mystery, for an itch to scratch, for a purpose again, that she had created one out of her life. Surrounding her were hundreds of pages, hundreds of thousands of words from the investigation. She had never realized that she had woven so much. Forgotten were the usual aches of her joints and the early bedtimes. Similar to lifelines, she had lived most of her life making connections about people's lives, archiving, telling their tales, and ensuring theirs were carefully and meaningfully preserved for the future of communes. Looking at her disorganized living room, with papers strewn everywhere, looking exactly like her workstation from long ago, she kneels, careful of her bad hip, and opens a dusty old trunk that kept her trusty ward loom. It was bulky, rusty, and smelled of massage oil, undoubtedly already an antique. A relic, yet still looking incredibly sturdy and reliable. Ready. Fingers slow and creaky, but alive with muscle memory, start to press and reach for one letter after another. Slowly, Kima starts to weave a story. She's not done yet with being a story weaver.